How are you this morning, Bruce?
Good, and yourself?
I'm doing great. Oh my gosh. So much better than I was last week.
Oh, good.
I went to the doctor and I got a prescription for antibiotics, and I was taking all those probiotics, and I thought, well, gosh, if I take the probiotics, why would I want to take the antibiotics? And
sometimes you need them both.
Sometimes you need them both, so I'm doing them on odd hours. Every 12 hours, I have a probiotic, and then on the every 12 hours, 6 hours different, I have an antibiotic, or probiotic, antibiotic.
I know that drill because that's what my mom was doing off and on for a number of months. So,
yeah, it's some pretty crazy stuff, I'll tell you. But what did I just do? Oh, my gosh, I just lost my page. I think, let me keep going.
I've got one.
You got a page?
All right. Yeah, I've got us on 112.
All right, well, you know what happened. There we go. I think I request for Journey, The Obstacles to Peace and A Course of Miracles, book by Dr. Kenneth Wapnick, and he is talking about the obstacles to peace, which we find those obstacles are certainly something we think are real.
We seem to make them really real, don't we? Yes.
We do. But here we are, and I think I might be, why do I keep doing that? I keep clicking something and it goes someplace else, so, but I think there's a quote that says the Holy Spirit's messengers are sent far beyond the body. Am I in the right place?
Where I left off is in the middle of a quote from chapter 28. We've read one paragraph, and I thought I'd back up and start that paragraph.
Okay. Well, why don't you do that? And then,
okay. So I have us actually paragraph down, but I'm going to back up a paragraph to the top of page 112, and I'm just going to read a little bit of Ken's commentary from the preceding page at the bottom of 111. And he says, the following passage from the Secret Vows in chapter 28 offers us one of the clearest statements in the course about the mistake of seeing the body rather than the mind as the problem and therefore the locus of the solution. If anybody doesn't know the word locus, it's not the thing that's like a grasshopper. It means the place. But it sounds like a locust, right? I remember learning that word and I thought, wow, what kind of grasshopper is a locust? Anyway.
Say one more thing about what you just said, and I'm just doing a search.
Section 6 of chapter 28.
Okay.
And he starts out, who punishes the body is insane. For here the little gap, the belief in separation, is seen, and yet it is not here. It, the body in brackets, has not judged itself, nor made itself to be what it is not. Yeah, the body can't do anything. It's an inert hologram. Right? So, it does not seek to make of pain a joy and look for lasting pleasure in the dust. It does not tell you what its purpose is and cannot understand what it is for. It does not victimize because it has no will, no preferences, and no wonder what it is. And so it has no need to be competitive. It can be victimized, but it cannot feel itself as victim. It accepts no role, but does what it is told without attack. You know, I'm remembering a little fragment or a wisp of a dream, something about puppets. And I just now kind of, you think sometimes you throughout the day, you remember little fragments of dreams. Well, that was just one of them. Like, I remember, you know, experiencing what it would be like as a body to be a puppet. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's just a mechanical thing that follows the dictates of the mind. But anyway, or the puppeteer in this case. And the quote goes on, second paragraph, which is where we left off last week. It is indeed a senseless point of view to hold responsible for sight a thing, the body, that cannot see, and blame it for the sounds you do not like, although it cannot hear. It suffers not the punishment you give because it has no feeling. It behaves in ways you, the decision maker in our minds, want, but never makes the choice. It is not born and does not die. It can but follow aimlessly the path on which it has been set. And if that path is changed, it walks as easily another way. It takes no sides and judges not the road it travels. It perceives no gap because it does not hate. It can be used for hate, but it cannot be hateful made thereby. Neutral, 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 nothing, nothing, nothing. Huh?
Really?
In the last two paragraphs. The thing, in brackets, the ego's thought system, you hate and fear and loathe and want, the body does not know. You send it forth to seek for separation and be separate. And then you hate it, not for what it is, but for the uses you have made of it. You shrink from what it sees and what it hears, and hate its frailty and littleness. And you despise its acts, but not your own. It sees and acts for you. It hears your voice, and it is frail and little by your wish. It seems to punish you, and thus deserve your hatred for the limitations that it brings to you. Yet you have made it, mind you, yet you think it is yourself, and that without it, yourself would be lost. And again, that's from chapter 28, section 6, paragraph 1. Anyway, yeah, it's a pretty lucid description of how, you know, we've made the body into the scapegoat and inverted cause and effect and ascribed and attributed all kinds of causal factors to what is really just a collection of holographic, illusory things that aren't even according to the laws of physics, that are hard to define because they, and if you try to pin down even one particle in subatomic physics, you can't pin it down because you can't know its location and its velocity, you know, both at the same time. It's you know, even according to, you know, quantum mechanics. That we call bodies that, you know, that participate and occupy patterns that we've ascribed to as meaningful in a space-time continuum that we also made up. And the big question that's never asked is, why did we make it up? Well, because we want to escape from the unconscious, unfounded guilt in our mind. And that's the whole, linchpin. That's the Achilles heel of ego's you know, strategy to keep us mindless. It's shield, double shield of oblivion strategy to keep us forever identifying with the puppet rather than with the mind, and you know, leaving us in a state of hopelessness and victimization. When in truth, you know, the body really just, and everything in the world really just reflects the decision we've made in the mind for which teacher. And once we choose a different teacher, i.e. Holy Spirit instead of ego, we see everything differently, including the body. Right?
Exactly. And it's a continuous decision. It's not a decision that I made a long time ago and I'm just living with it. I'm deciding every moment.
Thing. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Every moment I'm making that decision. So, and that's the great thing about all this, is that I can choose again at any moment and completely change everything. So it's not like, you know, it's set in stone. It is actually a constant decision, and I'm going to, you know, I have a choice at every moment. That's a gift.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. It's a tremendous gift, isn't it?
Exactly. So
That's our real freedom.
Yeah.
I mean, that's and I think that's where the Course emphasizes in so many places, that our only real freedom in this world is the decision to choose against the ego. And we don't even know what that other choice is, but we're guided to have that revealed to us by the willingness to say, hey, what I made up isn't working, so there must be, you know, as Dylan and Hill told each other, there must be a better way. So I'm willing to consider and to be open to the idea that, you know, maybe there's another complete thought system available to me that you know, get me out of this mess that I made up.
Yeah, and I'm willing to recognize that it was my the thought system that I'm experiencing that's making me think that I'm seeing something other than peace.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about today's lesson, which is really kind of a talk about an enigma. Have you read today's lesson? I bet you have.
I need to call and you will answer me.
And I was just talking with a group of people and saying, you know, is this your experience? You just call and God answers? Is this...
Well, I think once again, so much of the course is a cognitive dissonance experience, basically putting side by side the perspective of the Holy Spirit and the perspective of the ego. Because from the ego's perspective, hey, wait a minute, I asked for unexpected checks to come in the mail. I asked for a miraculous change in the status of my body or my relationships with certain people or groups of people or change in the weather or somehow magically other situations that I don't like change, and that's the magic that the ego wants and in many ways demands, and when its needs are unmet it feels victimized because it's a totally unsustainable, unrealistic, insane thought system, but it's so popular we don't even question it. I mean, we just don't even give it a moment's thought. It's like, well, what do you mean? You know, I'm never upset for the reason I think. How dare you suggest that?
Yeah. And we think that we can somehow a wish that we have is able to come true when we don't even know what it is that we really need.
And,
or want. Yeah. And I always I don't even think about this anymore, but I used to really focus on money and my bank account and, you know, how much is in there and how much is going to be in there and how much can I afford and how much is, and when am I going to get more money and maybe I'll win the lottery and not have to worry about this anymore. I was thinking about that stuff all the time and thinking that, without this, whatever money I think I need here, I'm not going to be able to do any of the things that I want to do. I'm not going to have any of the things that I want. I have this whole picture in my mind of cause and effect that were absolutely untrue and unsupported, not supported by anything that ever really happened. I've found myself being constantly disappointed. And, what I come to realize is that the reason I don't hear the answer to my call, the answer to my prayer, the answer to my question, is because I'm asking the wrong question. I'm calling for the wrong thing. I'm praying for something other than what God's will is. And so, what I'm getting is it's confusing and disappointing. And, you don't have to be confused or disappointed. You just have to relax and accept. And, I keep going back to that lesson 135, paragraph 18 that says, "What could you not accept? If you but knew that all things, past, present, and to come, are gently planned by one whose only purpose is your good." You know, you may not have understood the plan. And there's the rub, is the understanding of the plan.
Yeah, because we're clueless, yeah. We think that the dreams are going to make us happy. A moment ago, when you said disappointment, I flashed on, definitely retro mind, back in the Davy Jones locker of my mind, the Monkees lyric, disappointed haunted all my dreams from I'm a believer song.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But disappointment does haunt all our dreams when we're, working out of ego script, and buying into that dysfunctional maladaptive, expectation-driven craziness, you know? I mean, how could we be anything but disappointed if we're honest with ourselves with the outcome of the ego's strategy? Because really, I mean, if we think that there's something to be gained in the world, and that's the whole point of, you know, going through this book, and Ken does it so brilliantly, it just kind of covers so many of the bases in both general and specific terms so that, you know, it's you know, so many ways to look at it that we eventually will be, well, we're forcing ourselves, not in any kind of a, you know, a coercive way, but we're just basically, by sharing these conversations and doing all of the study that we do in the course, we're basically saying, I'm willing to allow myself to gradually be led away from what doesn't work. And
oh my gosh. You just made me think of something, but I'll have to look it up. So somebody posted on Facebook that just basically says that very same thing. You know, what I was asking for, I got disappointed because I didn't get what I was asking for. And then I realized, you know, I was asking for the wrong thing. And disappointment haunted all my dreams. I love that. And now you think of that. Davy Jones locker. love it. So I'm gonna go ahead and read on. And my Skype is going in and out. So if you lose me, it'll come right back. I don't know what's been happening, but it's probably the weather is what I'm thinking. I blame the weather. Because Mercury's not in retrograde anymore. So, and you know that's the cause of all these problems. So, chart A illustrates this. The problem is not is what is in the body or the world, which is on the right-hand side of the chart. Rather, the problem is what is in the mind, the left-hand side. It's the purpose that our mind's decision-makers have given the body, the uses you have made of it. That is our concern. So in essence, what we give up, what we quote-unquote, oop. All right, there you are back. I was just
that was a perfect timing. You said your Skype's been going out, in and out, and blame the weather, and then where'd it go?
Figured it out.
The call dropped.
So I was continuing on, and hopefully it's still... I know it's still recording. I just started reading the next paragraph. It says that the problem is what's in the mind. It's what I'm projecting and the uses that I've made of the decision, the body that I think is what I am. That's the concern. So in essence, what we give up, what we sacrifice is the decision to be fearful, guilty, unhappy, and in pain. That is what Jesus, turn the page, is teaching us. It is no sacrifice at all, but it is very easy to make the mistake of believing that we are to give up the body because that is what we believe we are. And a quote from the Course, quote, you think it is yourself and that without it, yourself would be lost, unquote. Once again, all that we give up is the ego's use of the body, which conceals our guilt through attacking others. All right, are you still with me? Let's see. Oh, Skype, what is going on with you today? And I'm not blaming Mercury. Let me try this again. In the holy heck. Calling him back. Alright, we maybe have to go to some other mode here because The Skype does not seem to like me today.
It seems to be hiccuping a bit.
It's hicking up. Which I could probably, well, that's through Skype too. I was going to say I could call you phone through my Skype, but that would be through Skype too.
Okay, well, let's give it a go. See if we can keep on with what we got.
Keep on keeping on with what we got. All right, so let's see. Why is this now? Okay, so once again, we give up the ego's use of the body, which conceals our guilt through attacking others. Another source of the misunderstandings that have arisen over these principles is the confusion of level 1 and level 2. On level 1, the body is totally illusory, and therefore it would be a mistake to give it any semblance of meaning, whether it be pleasurable or painful. But none of us is up to that level, otherwise we would not be here. The more appropriate and helpful way of approaching these principles, which is what level 2 is not to deny our body's needs and our body's pain. If we are hit over the head with a hammer, or if we do not have a coat on and it is 10 degrees below zero, we will be in pain. However, we do not have to make the body's pain or pleasure into a big deal. If we deny ourselves pleasure and do not allow ourselves to enjoy the things in the world, wearing a certain clothing, listening to music or whatever, we are making the body real. An important part of the forgiveness process of A Course in Miracles is that it helps us move beyond the body as a focus of either salvation or damnation to the underlying thought system in the mind that gave rise to the body and make the correction of that thought system. That underlying thought system, of course, is separation, which is undone by asking Jesus' help to forgive. So we come down to the body is basically a symbol of separation. And what we think we are then is a symbol of separation. We think we're a symbol of a rejection of God. And no wonder we don't hear the answers when we ask the questions, because we think we're separate from the source of the answer, and we think we're deaf to it. We can't hear it, we can't see it, we can't know it. And are you still with me?
Are you still there?
Yeah.
Oh, good. It's funny that your audio dropped off right when you said we're deaf to, we can't hear, and then silence. The timing was impeccable. That was good. That was very good. Okay, meanwhile, please do. Pardon the technical interruptions, everyone.
Yeah, I know, it's pretty funny.
It is.
So I just finished reading the paragraph that says, which is undone by asking Jesus' help to forgive. And so I'm going to let you read or comment.
Okay. Yeah, I think what you were sharing is that the body, it becomes a symbol of our belief in separation, and in the deepest level is we think we shattered perfect oneness. We think we threw God under the bus. We believe that somehow, because of our experience as a separate self, that the shared self, the eternally, infinitely, completely innocent, completely untarnished capital S self that the Course talks about and reminds us to return to, that we've never left except in a dream, we need to undo the dream, is just waiting there for us. It hasn't gone anywhere. We just have made an immense smoke screen that we call the material universe that gives us ample opportunity, if our intention and our motivation is to keep hiding, to do so. But we can turn around, we can use every little bit of this dream cosmos of space and time and matter and energy and bodies and stuff and separate things to become the mnemonic devices or the triggers to get back to the mind and say, wait a minute, this is part of me, this is part of me, that's part of me. We're all part of the same thing. And the me is not the little me, it's the part of capital S self that's only true when it includes everyone and everything. And obviously, on a physical level, that would be pretty gigantic in terms of cosmological scale, both time and space. But it's beyond time and space. That's the beauty of it. And it's not subject to the limitations of time and space. So that's hard for us to get our minds around. But I think we intuitively all know that there's something more. And that's what we're drawn to, right? So.
Exactly. And what I was thinking was I saw a post. It was very, very cute. It was just very, very simple. And it was, I'm just going to look at it right now. There's a picture of a kid, and he's sitting there, and he's thinking, I'm not good enough. And then there is a picture of him right next to that saying, I noticed that. I'm having a thought that I'm not good enough. And he's smiling. That's the difference.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed that. I see that I'm having a thought of this. Mm-hmm. And that brings you out of the being the victim of it and thinking that you are that.
Yeah.
You know, that's where we run into trouble, is that we think we are this thing instead of, I notice that I'm thinking I'm this body. Mm-hmm. I notice that I'm thinking that, you know, I had a sinus infection. I notice that I'm thinking that that's what caused my problem. You know, that's to be able to step away from, and then a conviction that I am actually just observing this thing being that, and it's not what I am. That makes a huge difference in your thinking. And we should teach that to all our children and ourselves. I should teach that to myself, I guess. I should say. I know I shouldn't shoot on myself, but I'm sure.
Carrie walked up to the stage after being introduced as this two-time award-winning, you know, Golden Globe winner, Jim Carrey. He says, that's right, and I'm two-time Golden Globe Award winner Jim Carrey, and I stay awake late at night sometimes wondering when I'm going to become three-time Golden Globe Award winner Jim Carrey. I just thought that was such a great, I mean, at the same time he was, you know, having fun making a joke, you know, and it wasn't mean-spirited, it was really kind of, you know, aimed not just at that one show, it was just aimed at the entire ego thought system of making a big deal out of differences, and it was, like you say, it was that person that was watching the self, the little s self, making the judgments. And it's really not even a person, it's really that awareness that we took with us into the dream that we call the Holy Spirit. And as we identify with that spirit more and more, it's easier and easier to question, not in any kind of a condemning way, but just say, wow, why would I want to do that to myself? Why wouldn't I just look at the ego shenanigans, not make a big deal about it, you know, like the previous paragraph or two, to do the things that we think are enjoyable in the world and avoid the things that we think are painful, but not make a big deal out of it and not identify with the part that makes a big deal out of it. And that, I think, is, you know, when we are able to look at our fake identity, then it opens us up to the real identity that's beyond that, behind that.
Exactly. So do you want to read on?
And sure. So we're on the mistake the Gnostics made?
Yes.
Or the one before that?
The mistake the Gnostics made, yeah.
Okay. The mistake the Gnostics made, because they too recognized that the world and body were not made by God, was that they skipped over all the intermediate steps, immediately jumping to the idea that to get involved with the body at all was sinful. All that does is make the body real, for otherwise you would not even bother to get involved with it. You would not even bother not to get involved with it. They confuse levels 1 and 2. A Course in Miracles begins with a metaphysics somewhat similar to that of the Gnostics, but the Course's whole process is a much more gentle and loving one. And actually, it is much more authentic because it does not condemn the tremendous investment we all have in the body. So we do not disappear into the heart of God today, nor even tomorrow. Within the illusion of time and space, the world, our body's home, it takes a long, long time for us to change our minds from their investment in guilt and fear to the recognition that what we want can be achieved only by a step-by-step process of healing all of our relationships. Jesus says, for example, regarding the quote, oh, not quotes, but the capitals, the last judgment, both capital letters, and here's a nice quote from chapter 2, section 8 in the text. Just as the separation occurred over millions of years, the last judgment will extend over a similarly long period, and perhaps an even longer one. Well, hopefully that doesn't mean it'll take us millions of years on an individual basis. but I think the patience, you know, that's suggested for us is the, you know, with infinite patience, yields immediate results. And I think that there's sort of a double entendre there, meaning that, you know, the more patient we are, the more peaceful we are in the moment, but also the more peaceful we are and the patient we are, the more that cumulative effect of moving away from the ego's insanity and weaning ourselves from its fearful poisoning, the closer we get to the point where we drop the fear thought system altogether. But we have no idea when that's going to be. I mean, that's kind of like the written in the stars thing, and it's probably, you know, just, well, you not really, you know, preoccupy ourselves with that. I think the Course makes a point of that in several places, that you know, it's silly to try to, you know, as Kent says, skip over steps. The thing to do is to notice when we're making big deals out of the level of form at every moment and not condemn ourselves for it. Just say, oh, I must have been afraid of love, so therefore I was making a big deal out of the form again. And then say, oh, I can see a piece of this. And I wasn't upset the first time, I think.
Exactly. And, you know, a lot of people read this and say, oh, well, it's going to take millions of years, so I'm not even going to bother during my life. You know, where am I going to get? I mean, I've heard people say that. Oh, Jesus is going to take millions of years, so, you know, why would, you know, who thinks they can be awake right now? Well, he also says salvation is immediate. It's here and it's now. So, you know, that doesn't seem to make sense, except if you recognize that time is an illusion, and it's basically connected to this belief that I'm separate. And all these millions of years, yes, you know, millions of years and millions of events, and you know, think about the creative ability of the Holy Son of God, you know, to, you know, if you're going to make a mistake, we're going to make a mistake that's a whopper, and it's
or it seems to be a whopper.
It's going to have lots and lots and lots of steps to get back and all that kind of stuff. But again, because it is just a mistake, when he's saying it might take longer, even longer, is because admitting the mistake and asking for the correction is a lot harder than initially making the mistake. And so, you know, it may seem like it's going to be a lot longer because, you know, at some point, you know, something's got to give, and we are just so stubborn. We don't give until there is no more. You know, I'm not going to give up until I have exhausted every single avenue I can think to make this thing work. Then that's what we're doing. We're trying to make the illusion work. We're trying to make the mistake. We're trying to prove that we were right in the first place. You know, and you know, it really wasn't a mistake. So the thing that's taken the time is our letting go of our ownership of the illusion.
Yeah.
I don't want this anymore. And it's hard to think you don't want something anymore that's so vast and amazing, you know.
Well, it's because we've distorted our interpretations are so distorted that we've made special things that are nothing in such extravagant and extraordinary ways, and contorted and contrived our minds to the extent. Humanity seems much more comfortable and acceptable, but that's only because our minds are so powerful that we've been able to make up a thought system that is so bizarre and so unimaginably twisted that you know, we're able to convince ourselves that, you know, opposites exist and are real, and that, you know, duality is possible, and you know, the, all animals are equal, but some are more equal than others, and all, yeah, all kinds of crazy stuff, right?
Exactly. And so it's our thinking, you know. Nothing's either good or bad. It's our thinking that makes it so. And it can happen in an instant that your thinking can be changed. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, who's to say? I mean, I know we've been doing this for millions of years. How old is the Earth? And you know, I mean, that's kind of a, you know, a trick question there, because it's instant. It just happened just now.
Right.
You know, it just happened.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. Time's a trick, a vast illusion, it says.
So.
Do you
want
to go on?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So where are we at? Are we?
I think I have. We have that. And in discussing the fifth stage, now we're getting into the dark night of the soul.
Yes. There we go. in discussing the fifth stage in the development of trust, A Course in Miracles, equivalent to the mystic's quote unquote dark night of the soul, and the transition to the sixth and final stage, which is the real world, Jesus makes the following statement. And this statement, I'm going to tell you right now, is what shifted me completely. Yeah, are you still there?
No, I'm still here.
Okay.
Your audio cut out for me. But.
Okay. This statement is what shifted everything for me, absolutely everything in my understanding of A Course in Miracles. So it's very important to me. And now he must attain a state in the sixth stage of development of trust, that may remain impossible to reach for a long, long time. And he doesn't continue with the statement. But the statement actually is, I'm going to go and find that, in fact, because...
Here it is, yeah. Okay, so let me... Can I just go ahead and read that?
Yes, go ahead and read it, please.
Okay, so this is Mentor Teachers, Development of Trust, which is section 4, and part 1 is trust, and then paragraph 7 is next stage of the period of unsettling, which is the fifth stage. And then I'm going to skip down to sentence 7. And now he must attain a state that may remain impossible to reach for a long, long time. And here's the important part. And if you read that without the rest of it, which I'm surprised Ken did, but you know, maybe he's going to cover it later. I'm sure he will, actually. But then the last two sentences really are, I think, profoundly helpful. He must learn to lay all judgment aside and ask only what he really wants in every circumstance. Side by side on the altar of the mind, asking us to examine, hey, what's worked with the ego? Hey, what's worked with the Holy Spirit?
When I finally got this, because I just, you know, how many times have I read this Manual for Teachers, and how many times have I read this Development of Trust, and when I suddenly realized, oh, the state that I must achieve is a state of laying all judgment aside and asking only what I really want in every circumstance, and not what do I really want. Ask God, ask the Holy Spirit, what do I really want?
Mm-hmm. And that he's talking to the decision maker in the mind, not to the Lynn and the Bruce that thinks they're separate individuals with investment in substitutions that are called personas and bodies. It doesn't mean we ignore those things. It just means we take them less and less seriously as our identity. We identify with those things less and less. And that, I think, is crucial to the Course. It's, you know, I like how Ken says you can't get too far from the metaphysics, and that it's all, the whole Course is not always and only about the mind, and has that, because we're so heavily invested in material outcomes and experiences. and our ego's interpretation of those experiences.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. So you want to continue reading? And yeah, you're still cutting out, or Skype is still cutting out.
Yeah, I could kind of tell, too, because you're... but I'll go ahead and
okay.
Pick up where we left off. Okay. However, many people misread denial of bodily impulses and feelings. This is why Jesus says in chapter 2, the body is merely part of your experience in the physical world. However, it is almost impossible to deny its existence in this world. And that's from chapter 2, section 4. And then elsewhere it says it's a particularly unworthy form of denial because we're denying the classroom that gets us back to the mind. And I think that's the important point. Ken goes on, to shift our perception from the body as salvation to a perception that salvation is the healing of the mind, that is the goal of A Course in Miracles.
I have a UPS and I have my system on it and everything. So it's something from outside.
Okay.
So, to shift our perception from the body as salvation to a perception that salvation is the healing of the mind, that's the goal of Course in Miracles. And so that's all we're doing, is going from I am bad to I think I'm bad.
I think I thought I was bad. Wait a minute. There must be a loophole in there somewhere. Maybe I was wrong. Kind of like that. I think, what is that quote? I thought I was mistaken once, but I was wrong. That's actually a pretty interesting metaphysical statement.
I thought I was wrong, but I was wrong. I thought I was wrong, but I was mistaken.
Something like that, yeah.
Now, that
only works, of course, for the Holy Spirit, you know, but of course, the Holy Spirit would never ask that question because it knows that, you know, as long as we, you know, we know when we follow the Holy Spirit, that as long as we follow that curriculum, that instruction, you know, we'll be at peace. And so, you know, it basically cancels out the ambiguity and the uncertainty and the doubt and the fear and all that stuff that comes from the ego's, you know, actually appropriate questioning of its own validity. but the ego tries to divert it, and that's why this double shield of oblivion, you know, technique of making the world a big deal so we don't even get to the mind. But then on those rare occasions when we do, it's like, oh, well, you can't go there because that's where all the sin, guilt, and fear is hidden, and you'll be destroyed instantly, you know. And actually, again, the ego's right because the ego would be destroyed. That's not our real identity. That's the one thing it doesn't want us to know.
But it's still scary.
Oh, yeah. No, and I think dismissing the fear that we can put ourselves into is obviously not what we're suggesting at all. But it is, I think, important to remember to, however we can do it, to take the hand of our inner kindness teacher, whether we, you know, whether it's a Jesus Buddha image in our mind, or whether it's a, you know, a Ken Mopnik or some other course teacher that we, you know, feel has really, you know, shared the spirit of gentleness and kindness and clarity that, you know, I have several that come to mind, and whatever, you know, it doesn't really matter as long as we have...
Can I call you back in about 10 minutes? Okay, bye.
Yeah, as long as we have some, you know, toolbox in our mind of, okay, where do I go when I get a panic attack, or I'm afraid, or I'm, you know, feel lonely, or uncertain, or... You know, all the things the Course talks about is like, if we have a practice of forgiving ourselves and forgiving everyone and being kind and being gentle with ourselves and being patient with ourselves, all those things in our toolbox then accumulate and give us ways to cope when things in the world, you know, inevitably don't go the way our egos want them to, and we're tempted to, you know, make big deals out of circumstances and, you know, do downward spirals into, you know, the dark night of the soul stuff. Yeah.
Exactly. And so it's something that, again, is a constant. I haven't had a dark night for a long, long time because of why. Because every time things start getting dark, I'm like, oh, duh. You know, I'm listening to the wrong voice. I'm listening to the wrong teacher. And again, that lesson from today is something that is really helpful to me because I do recognize that God always answers whenever I call. And so if I'm not hearing what I perceive to be God's voice, is because I've asked the wrong question. I'm listening to the wrong voice, and I can choose again. So simple.
It is. You know what comes to mind? This is maybe a little bit nerdy of a metaphor, but years ago when I was learning about semiconductor manufacturing, and they have what they call clean rooms where, you know, even the... with electronic equipment, right, and make it useless. So what they have is what they call it gets sloughed off bodies, you know, whether it's a cough or a, you know, a hair would be a gigantic contaminant, but even just, you know, little microbes and stuff, all that has to be, you know, dealt with and eliminated. So they have what's called positive pressure that basically takes a source of ultra-pure to the awareness of love, of love's presence, because the Holy Spirit is really speaking to us all throughout the day, and of course uses poetic language and says God is speaking to us all through the day, and we need but ask and God will answer us, today's work request and suggest, but it's really only the resistance that we put up to that, it's only the fight that our ego has that makes it a challenging situation. Because we're so heavily identified with the individual self that we made up and the belief that, you know, underlying belief that somehow we messed up big time by making up this whole dream and now we're going to have to pay for it. You know, that's the fallacious underpinning of the ego's whole crazy universe. Right.
Yeah, and that now you shall pay is really a pretty scary place to be.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, my pal talk went down in the middle of your description of the clean room, and so not all that story got into the recording, I'm afraid. But I found it quite interesting.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay.
And it's interesting to me because. Well, I used to work in the nuclear industry and worked with plutonium, and we worked in a place where you had to, you know, wear, you know, certain clothes and everything so that you wouldn't get contaminated by it. And we had to have everything under a negative pressure because it was a vacuum.
Floating on itself like a black hole, so... There's your positive negative pressure, right?
Exactly, exactly. And it's like my probiotics and my antibiotics.
So when they come together, do they make light, like matter and antimatter?
You know, it's a kind of crazy thing. I was thinking, you know, what the heck is happening here? But, you know, we're spent our whole life trying to kill the things we don't want and trying to cultivate the things we do want. And, you know, the actuality of it is, yeah, when they come together, they counteract each other. That's why you can't take them both at the same time. You know, don't eat yogurt and take antibiotics at the same time because they contradict each other. And that's what this whole life is about.
It's one big bundle of contradictions, isn't it?
It is. It's crazy. It's cracking me up. So I'm thinking, let's finish this paragraph, and then I know you had some announcements that you wanted to make last week that you didn't get to, and it felt like the Skype went down again here. But
Oh, well.
I'm gonna finish reading this, and then any announcements that you want to make, and any announcements I want to make, we will do. So peace is extended from you only to the eternal. This is from the Obstacles to Peace. Peace is extended from you only to the eternal, and it reaches out from the eternal in you. It flows across all else. So the peace comes from the eternal in me to the eternal in me, and it flows across everything. Love flows across everything. And that's what the Holy Spirit did. The Holy Spirit came into this crazy illusion that we made and put peace across everything, put love across everything. And all we have to do is connect to that. And we are in peace, and we are in love, and we are no longer in fear. And that millions of years is done. It's over. Or at least that's how I see it.
It really is over. It's a done deal. But that's not where we think we're at, so we need to make sure we don't skip over steps and use everything that's in this world that, you know, comes up in front of our face on a given day as a mechanism for choosing peace instead of ego's craziness. I do have one announcement. This is the first time I've announced this. I got an email from Bob Rosenthal of Foundation for Inner Peace. Can you still hear me okay?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay. They have some tickets for the CMC conference over Memorial Day in Los Angeles, the International Course in Miracles conference, the 2020 Vision for the Real World one. And he has, for the first three buyers, tickets for $390, which is about 20% of the original price, and 25% off the current CMC price, and then the second two for $410, which is about 15% off, and then the final two for $430, which is about 10%. So basically it's sort of an incentive for getting these to people who might want them. And anyway, you can mail a check to Bob Rosenthal. If you're interested, you can just go to the contact page at the Foundation for Inner Peace and just put CMC tickets, interested in CMC tickets. And I'm sure Bob will get that and then respond and let you, whoever's interested, get those tickets. So, anyway.
Perfect. That's wonderful. Yeah, well, that's a great deal. In fact, if you really want to go to that conference I decided this year I'm not speaking at the conference. Dove and I decided we were not going to speak at the conference. And, I might want to go, though. And so
I am going, actually. I decided to go. So.
Yahoo! Well, it's right there in Los Angeles, and Gary will be there.
I'm going to be in California that month anyway, so it's just a relatively short drive compared to if I'd come up morning. So anyway, I'm looking forward to that.
Very good. Well, thank you so much, Bruce Rawls. Let's see, any announcements I have? Dove and I do a conference call where we talk about we're reading through the course. We're in Chapter 3 right now. And we do that on Sunday mornings at 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time. And that's a call-in to free conference calling. The number is 605-472-5694. And the code to get in is 158-857-pound or hashtag. And we welcome anybody who'd like to join us in that call. It's a lot of fun, and we get very deep into the course, and we go about a page at a time. We're very slow, one section at a time, basically. So that's a 90-minute call. And looking forward to the holiday, Thanksgiving, and I hope that you enjoy your holiday coming up.
Likewise.
All right. So I'm going to let go of the mic and turn it over to Carrie and run in and turn off the recording. And then do you have a minute to talk?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, hang on. Letting go of the mic for Carrie and Iris.
Okay.
And I'll be right back after I turn off the recording.